I think we're all looking for the time and place in history when the role of data and analytics could really make a difference on the care that's being provided today, provide more access to care, reduce the cost of care, and improve quality and safety.
That was the voice of Eric Threlkill, the Senior Vice President for Business Intelligence and Analytics at Envision Healthcare. Eric shares why he's so passionate about using data to drive healthcare innovation. You're listening to How I Transform This, presented by Versus 12. Versus 12 is the award-winning Salesforce Gold consulting partner focused on healthcare innovation nationwide. In this episode, Eric explains how policy changes and technological developments are changing the role of data in healthcare. He also gives us his perspective on Nashville's unique role in the industry and the work Tennessee Hems is doing to build up the healthcare ecosystem.
All the things that exist in people's lives digitally and outside of healthcare, we should take advantage of and make sure that our members and leaders and future students and workforce have those same tools and capabilities.
I'm your host, Clark Buckner, and along with Versus 12 founder and CEO, Tammy Hawes, each episode, we're seeking out healthcare technology industry leaders, exploring stories of success, the transformation of healthcare. For more stories like this, be sure to visit versus12.com/podcast. Now let's jump in.
Hello, my name is Eric Threlkill. I'm the Senior Vice President of BI and Analytics for Envision Healthcare.
Welcome, Eric. We're so excited to have you in the studio. We can't wait to hear a little about your story and how you've been transforming healthcare. And welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Eric, this is especially a treat for me. I've known you for a while, and your passion is just exuberant, and you have a lot to say, a lot of experience about where healthcare's been and where it's going, and also I'm excited to hear more about your new role.
Well, thanks for that. So, thank you. My background and professional career started with Touche Ross and Company, which for this is dating my age, but was one of the Big Eight accounting firms, merged into Deloitte, went to the University of Florida, certified public accountant. My degree's in accounting, and that's where I began my professional life. Moved to Nashville with that firm. And as I tell folks, in Nashville, you can be in healthcare or in music, and I can't sing, so healthcare was for me. And I found that really through Deloitte. Became chief information officer through understanding capabilities and leading information systems with a company called FICOR, and then joined America Service Group. And then most recently, I've been CIO at AmSurge for 12 years. AmSurge and Envision Healthcare merged in December of 2016. And I'm really pleased and excited to take on a brand new role for a brand new department that's been created called BI and Analytics. And it's really important in the state that we are in healthcare.
And that merger between AmSurge and Envision was almost a precursor to all things that are happening in healthcare right now with mergers and acquisitions and consolidations and partnerships and trying to figure out how to serve a larger patient population.
Right. I think that's a great observation. AmSurge, an independent company, started in Nashville 27 years ago, a leader in ambulatory surgery centers in the U.S., 261 of those in 35 states and the District of Columbia. We acquired a company actually in 2014 called Sheridan Healthcare, large physician services organization. And then that entity, known as AmSurge, merged with Envision Healthcare. But to your point, Tammy, I absolutely agree. Consolidation allows organizations, especially on the provider side, to have the scale that they need to really operate efficiently and address some of the challenging problems for the country, which is cost, quality, and access.
So, Eric, we met several years ago, and you had this passion and you had this vision about what you could do with data. So tell us about that.
Well, I'm really fortunate to work with the company at AmSurge, and my passion for data and analytics has been with me all my life. So I was always loved mathematics and liked statistics and loved baseball because of statistics. And tennis is a completely different game these days with what you can do with analytics. But at AmSurge, we are a leader in GI care, gastroenterology services, and we're fortunate that physicians use information systems that allows us to capture that data electronically. We've combined it, we augment that data, and we've got some very interesting insights, actually using some Salesforce platform called Wave Analytics, I think Einstein now, as an early precursor to some of our analytics work to really give us the visualizations and really understand things like average screening age, impact of certain social determinants on findings with GI care, and then using that to enter into new partnerships to really add value to the healthcare equation.
So in this world of instant access, instant scheduling, minute by minute news, you had a different problem. Your problem was you needed to reach out to people that had a service like a colonoscopy, you know, 5 or 10 years later.
Right, right. And a lot of, you know, if you just look in the United States, about 63% of age-eligible Americans are screened for colon cancer. There are multiple ways one can be screened. The gold standard is the screening colonoscopy. It's a visual observation of the colon by a qualified physician, and if there are adenomas or if there are polyps, they can be removed and really, really prevent colon cancer, and if not detected early enough, to address it. Colon cancer can be cured. It's one of those cancers that, if detected earlier, 5-year survival rates are in excess of 95%. So the story for America is if you're age eligible, regardless of family history, be screened for colon cancer at the ages recommended. 2 years ago, some new research comes out, and American Cancer Society, as a result, has lowered the screening age to age 45. There's some interesting findings where colon cancer amongst individuals born 1993 and after are about 4 times the rate as they were of a previous generation. So we look at our own data and say, well, our average screening age is actually 58, 8 years past the recommended screening age of 50, 13 years after the new screening age of age 45. And then how do we use that data to really understand the barriers that could exist in screening programs around the United States? Could be cost, could be transportation, could be just lack of information and understanding of that particular condition.
So what were some of the things that you found through your work over the past couple of years? What were some of the ahas?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. You know, an interesting one for me that I'd never quite focused in on, but knowing my mother and my wife, Nancy, I can totally get, and is that women are at lower risk for colon cancer, but more women as a percentage get screened for colon cancer than men.
How about that?
And I think it's one of those things where maybe the male species says, I can handle this, or I don't need this, or I don't have time for this. And even though they are percentage-wise at a higher risk. What's interesting about that, in the 8 years in which we've been tracking the data, that percentage has stayed about the same every year. It's about 55-45 women to men get screened for colon cancer, and that has stayed consistent every year. The other one is in the average screening age. And again, it's something I think that we're trying to address with more population health data and better understanding and partnerships. How could we work in communities to really increase the knowledge and awareness to be screened for colon cancer and then provide the programs and services at an affordable price that makes that possible?
One of the reasons you're excited about this new role is because of the state of healthcare today. And you're talking about some of the problems that are in healthcare today. So I'd be curious to hear what some of those are that maybe you feel optimistic about that you can solve.
Healthcare and what really excites me about analytics today really dates back to, I would say, 2004 and then a little bit later in 2009. Two key events. George Bush was president in 2004 and by executive order established the Office of National Coordinator. He had a vision at that time that said, if Americans, at least 50%, were on an electronic health record, then the research that would be possible and the coordination of care and the quality would increase and at the same time reduce cost. So he established a government organization that stood up the ONC, what we know as the ONC. 2009, President Obama, under the ARRA Act, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus bill, established grants of about $34 billion for physicians and hospitals to actually implement electronic health records. And then the ONC placed standards around those health records And what we've seen over the last decade is just an astounding number of hospitals and physician practices that now have completely digitized the electronic health record. Those of you that are as old as I am remember paper charts were the norm in physician offices, and we've seen events like Katrina completely decimate hospitals and long-term care centers that didn't have those electronic records. So as a country, we've completely been the benefactors of those two pieces of legislation.
So that legislation created these opportunities, and where do you see the work that you do now fitting into some of these early initiatives?
Yeah, I would say at the same time. So if you look at America with the stimulus bill 2009 and regulations around it, providing the resources for hospitals, physicians to implement health records, at the same time, companies like Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Apple were creating cloud architectures where analytics can happen at scale. Big data, the ability to ingest not only data that lives within the health system, but pull in data from outside of the health system. Recent studies said if you really want to provide health to the whole person, only about 8% of that data actually lives in an electronic health record. And then think of your own life and your own physician visits. You might have one or two physician visits per year, maybe an inpatient procedure or an emergency room visit. But what about all that data that you have in your regular life, your biometric data, your perhaps data from DNA that you've obtaining? Now with these large computing capabilities, the ability to research, to develop personalized treatment plans for the individual instead of a population of people exist. And that's what's really exciting today. I think we're all looking for the time and place in history when the role of data and analytics could really make a difference on the care that's being provided today, provide more access to care, reduce the cost of care, and improve quality and safety. And that is absolutely what we're excited about at Envision, large physician services organization at AmSurg, and then me personally and a team of great professionals around BI and analytics.
So I'm just as excited about that because I've been around healthcare technology for a while, and we wanted to do these things 10, 15, 20 years ago, and there wasn't a lack of data, but there was no technology to actually process that so that you could come out with any outcomes to do operational efficiencies around managed care and population health and individual care. So this is a pretty exciting time for all of us who've been around a while.
It is. And just the evolution of, say, large data stores, relational data warehouses, enterprise data warehouses all had structure to them. It was very, very difficult to build those. Those existed on premise. They required servers and software and maintenance and upkeep. And now with cloud analytics and concepts of data hubs and data lakes, it's just ingestion of large amounts of data. Could be video, could be audio data that's complemented by that. Amazon has great tools for NLP and artificial intelligence to really augment that data and ingest it faster. And we're just at a whole new world around research and really providing personalized care. When we get to the point where we can extend that through mobility and iPad, iOS devices, Android devices, and where individuals are taking a much more active role in their health versus their health care, then it will really be exciting.
So I remember in healthcare, the technology systems were all about collecting data and processing it for billing, nothing really being processed for workflow or triggers or alerts. Okay. Now we're in this age of artificial intelligence and analytics to where I see we have smart data. So one piece of data feeds the record, which initiates some other piece of data to kind of activate and say, hey, wait a minute, now there's something we might need to do because that's a new piece of information about this patient. And I'm really excited about that. So, I'm calling that self-correcting records, self-correcting electronic medical records. And we're developing technology around that too.
Right. And I think that's a great place. I know Salesforce is in the place of what's called RPA or robotic process automation, where data and workflow can be built on patterns that can inform people faster and faster and faster of activities that they have or improve just efficiency and processes. That's how we're using it today. But I agree with you.
Okay, so you were talking about more research is going to help us unlock more future. Where is the majority of the research usually coming from? Universities?
I would say the majority is the NIH, National Institute of Health, provides a lot of grants and research. In fact, Vanderbilt University in our own community here has the largest grant for the All of Us campaign, a personalized medicine approach where data is being gathered for 1 million individuals and then providing research on top of that. I'm really excited about, and we'll spend some time talking about Tennessee Hems in the yes. Summit of the Southeast. We have IBM Watson Health. That's a $50 million artificial intelligence project with Vanderbilt and Brigham and Women's in Boston that will be speaking at our event in April of 2020.
April 14th, 2020, right?
That's exactly
right.
Should
be here before we know it. So we are definitely keep talking about that. And so the reason I ask about the research is you're saying like how things are moving, and both of you are reflecting on just how exciting this is with the context of where it's been. So when you take a look at research, then you have the private side, you have the public side, all of this seems to be lifting the potential for combating these problems in healthcare. And Tammy, we were just talking about how some EHRs, you know, there's errors in it, but now there's getting technology where it can be self-correcting. We're seeing a lot of changes, and it seems like we're starting to see changes faster and faster.
That's exactly right. I think the last two administrations are both enabling more innovation to occur in the free marketplace. In the Obama administration, he appointed the first chief technology officer, a gentleman named Anish Chopra, who was succeeded by a gentleman named Todd Park, who said, if we unlock some of this government data through an open data program and provide that to private industry, then you would spur innovation at a whole new level. Solutions would be developed to drive costs lower, access higher, and quality higher.
Let's talk about Tennessee Hems next. And Tammy, you're on the board now.
Yes, I'm so excited and honored, especially to be on the board with Eric leading the Tennessee Hems this year. And Eric, you have always been a community champion. And Tennessee Hems is one of those organizations like Healthcare Council, Nashville Healthcare Council, that really truly makes an impact not only on healthcare in Nashville, but healthcare nationally. Last year, I believe, Tennessee Hems won the national chapter of the year.
That is absolutely correct. And we're still celebrating, by the way.
You should be. That's so amazing.
Until somebody replaces us as chapter of the year.
We're world champions.
We're going to keep celebrating.
Global.
No, I'm excited. First of all, I love the community. I moved to Nashville 36 years ago. I would never move back to Florida. I love it here. This is where I want to be. And it's an exciting time to be in the community with what the community is doing and growing rapidly, but also be in the industry now armed with better and better tools to really make a difference. I know that Tennessee Hems, with the Healthcare Council and with the EC and with the Greater Nashville Technology Council, all working together, can continue to build solutions for this community. About 3 years ago, Brookings did a study on Nashville through their Metropolitan and Cities Division, and it was really insightful. And the hypothesis was, could Nashville leverage its 50-year intellectual property and health services, really started by three gentlemen forming HCA and 900 companies since then over 50 years, to become an health information technology hub and innovation hub, really providing new solutions to healthcare outside of those that have been traditionally developed here. And the conclusion, I think, was mixed. While there are some innovation and assets in the community, and while we have world-class universities and colleges and universities that contribute to Nashville and healthcare, that it was fairly fragmented, and the community needed to work a little bit better together.
It's interesting, an outsider saw the fragmentation, because usually from the outside in, it seems like it's pieced together, right?
Right. Seems cohesive, collaborative. People know each other. They work together, but maybe not as cohesive, collaborative as other communities. One that they referenced was the city of Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, as you know, has gone through a complete transformation of a steel city to now one that's really focused on healthcare and higher education. They call it Meds and Eds. Pittsburgh put together in their community two academic centers, University of Pittsburgh, UPMC, and one prestigious organization, Carnegie Mellon, that's doing a lot of the work on IoT and autonomous vehicles for Uber, actually is coming out of Pittsburgh through Carnegie Mellon. But they put together what they called the Pittsburgh Health Data Alliance. And it was taking patient de-identified data from the two health systems, packaging that, and letting companies develop solutions off of that. And what that has done for the community is 65 projects have been funded, three companies were incubated out of there that have successfully grown and raised additional capital. It's created jobs, people like living in Pittsburgh. And, you know, several of us looked at that and said, Pittsburgh, to me, is I've got a little bad taste in my mouth about the city of Pittsburgh from the Stanley Cup of 2 years ago. So we can't have it that Pittsburgh can possibly do this better than Nashville, who's the king of healthcare. And with a little bit of working better together, we can solve some of these solutions and create the ecosystem that needs to exist here for the next 50 years.
So you have led some very strategic initiatives with Tennessee Hems. We talked a little bit about the event coming up next year, but other exciting things on the roadmap for Tennessee Hems this year?
Yep. We have, at the direction of the national organization that is really doing a great job of recognizing that what America faces in healthcare challenges, aging population, rising costs, other parts of the world also face. And that some of these solutions, while it's hard to export health services, it's easier to export digital solutions that can really make a difference in people's lives. So we've tried to broaden the traditional membership role to include everybody that's working in and around healthcare, whether that's on the digital side or the analytics side, the marketing or the services side, and then create programs and events that are more around convergence and partnerships and innovation. Versus what I'll say is maybe a little older school compliance, security, all of those things are obviously very, very important, but try to focus on the new partnerships and opportunities using data and digital that could really make a difference.
So you not only understand the value of analytics, but you also understand, even at the level of Tennessee Hems, the complexity of communicating with all those constituents. So you've also decided to use Salesforce to manage all of those relationships.
That's right.
I think you're probably the first Hems chapter in the whole country, which again, just puts another feather in your cap for being a very innovative, creative leader.
No, we've done some good things here, and the Salesforce platform will allow us to create the digital assets that we need to continue to grow the chapter. We are a statewide chapter. Frankly, we do have a little bit of a challenge in really boosting the membership. 77% of our members come from Middle Tennessee, so we'd like to have a bigger influence in Chattanooga and Knoxville and certainly in Memphis. And this digital platform, we're confident, will enable us to do it. So we're excited about that. Other things that we're doing that are very unique to Hems chapters are our Workforce Accelerator Program.
Yep.
We have one of the Brookings recommendations was the community has to figure out a way, both in technology and in healthcare, to upskill the existing workforce, but also grow new leaders within the industry. We've got a very rich program. It's 14 weeks. It's 3 hours a night. I give a lot of credit to the students who are going through it and the companies that sponsored them. And it's a unique platform for the chapter. We've extended that now to the ability for remote students. And we actually have some out-of-state students that are currently enrolled this particular semester. So we're excited about that. All the things that exist in people's lives digitally and outside of healthcare, we should take advantage of and make sure that our members and leaders and future students and workforce have those same tools and capabilities.
And I think that is a very important give back to the community. Versus 12 is taking advantage of that program. We have a student and one of our top level executives in the program.
I think you'd be
perfect for it. It's 3 hours a night, is the really, really top flight topics, 14 different topics, taught by most of them are Tennessee M's board members who are giving their time. And then the collaboration that exists within the students and the alumni effect of that program for that point forward is really, really rich. I am fortunate to get to attend the graduation exercises where all of the students give a short presentation on what they've learned, and they're at the same time funny and hilarious, insightful, but really addressing and pinpointing, this is what I learned are the problems in healthcare, and here's how they could be solved. And they're really, really fascinating. Clark, you'd be an excellent student. We'll sign you. No report card, but you do have to show up.
I will show up. I will definitely show up. Anything else you want to mention about the April 14th, 2020 event coming up, the Summit of the Southeast?
Yes, we're really excited to have Senator Bill Frist to do a live podcast. He's got a very good podcast. It's called A Second Opinion. And he has a conversation with leaders in healthcare, and he's agreed to do a podcast at our event, which we're really, really excited about. We will have the Pittsburgh Health Data Alliance and Amazon be presenting on how they've taken that data solution and really built the next level of innovation in Pittsburgh. And I'm hopeful that that will be a model for our community here in Nashville. We'll be hearing from IBM Watson Health and Vanderbilt University on artificial intelligence research that's occurring right here in Nashville and up in Boston at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And then we'll have the CEO of Blue Cross of Tennessee. She's a great speaker, has a really powerful message on this combination of innovation and empathy as Blue Cross is indeed rolling out new models of care that are important for citizens of Tennessee.
That's a big lineup.
It'll be 2020 election year. Paul Keckley will be speaking, as well as Don Rucker, physician, who leads the Office of National Coordinator in Washington, D.C. So we'll have an election focus. We'll have a contemporary view of government providing resources for innovation in the private sector. And we'll be hearing from other communities about how they're building those assets as well.
As we start to wrap up here, as you think about the future, what kind of challenge do you have, or what kind of optimism do you have? Like, where are you seeing things going?
Well, I'm bullish on the opportunity that Nashville will be the leaders of healthcare services and innovation for the next 50 years. I do know that that will be a significant challenge for us as a community. And I believe what we need to do better is take the fragmented ecosystem that exists today and work better together through the community associations and through the programs and services that a number of organizations are championing. We have 900 healthcare companies that are based here, 18 of which are public, all going through some serious challenges with health services delivery of the future. But that innovation can occur here and can continue to really fuel the city and the community with economic growth. And I'd love when Boston or Silicon Valley or Austin, Texas or Denver is doing some exciting work in healthcare, but I'd like to see more of it happening here on the innovation front. We can absolutely do it. And the city and the community benefits from a very collaborative, good to know you. You see people professionally, you see them at hockey games or at football games, and it's a great community that has a collaborative spirit and a growth-oriented spirit, and I know that we can do it. The Tennessee M's Association, Greater Nashville Technology Council, Nashville Healthcare Council, and all the organizations and universities that are a part of the community contributing.
Good deal. I think we have a bright future ahead, and I've loved hearing your story and hearing what you're working on. And it sounds like we just need to take that next step, be even more connected. So what's a good way for someone to connect with you? And what's a good way to connect with Tennessee Hymns?
Yeah, so feel free to reach out to me. LinkedIn is probably my preferred social platform. I always respond to email. I'm active in the community at different events and associations. TennesseeHymns.org, TNHymns. HIMSS.org.
So, Eric, this has been fascinating. I'm always so thrilled to hear from you and see what you're up to, because you're always up to something, and always something innovative and collaborative and something to support the community and healthcare transformation. And I always learn so much. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks to you. And we're excited to have you as a board member and working together with Clark and others in the community to make this a better place.
That's great. Thanks for listening to How I Transform This, Success Stories of Transformation in Healthcare, presented by Versus 12. To learn more about how Versus 12 is best situated to transform the healthcare industry, and to follow along with this show, be sure to visit versus12.com/podcast.